702. 702. On 92.7. And 106 FM. Streaming on 702.co.za, the 702 app, and on DSTV channel 856.
It's just gone 9 minutes past 6 o'clock. Good evening from me, Ray White, and for Bruce on The Money Show this evening. The Money Show brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently, Nedbank. Well, coming up on the program this evening, the full submission by Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan to the Zondo Commission of Inquiry has been leaked, was leaked last night. Taking a very close look at this shortly. Later on, talking soccer, no we not, but talking to soccer legend Jomo Sono. He's involved in a new TV streaming platform, catching up with him a little bit later on, just after 7 actually. Then our market commentator tonight, Graham Kerner, will join us with the JSE under a little bit of pressure today. Quite disappointing actually after our gains from yesterday and of course from last week. In our frequently asked questions tonight, looking at the United States economy as it comes face to face with China and Turkey, does it face isolation? What happens next there? And then Pavlo Fotidis of Auric Business Accelerator joins us a little later on with some more small business advice, this time on how to wind down your business for the year. So lots to talk about this evening. Then the fast fact, courtesy of Cape Talk 702 and Mercantile Bank, the business bank inspired by entrepreneurs. R1,000 are for grabs. I'll be taking the 10th SMS tonight. So you have to SMS your answer to 31702 or 31567. The question tonight, if I said to you 500 billion rand and counting so far, what am I talking about? If I said to you 500 billion rand and counting so far, what am I talking about? SMS the answer to 31702 or 31567, taking the 10th SMS on either.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Money Show.
It's been the big story over the past 24 hours. Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan has detailed what he says is exactly what went on behind the scenes during the years of now former President Jacob Zuma. Our economy was drastically affected. This is a submission that Gordhan is expected to deliver to the Zondo Commission of Inquiry into state capture next week. So it's very important. It was leaked, though, to the media last night. In it, Gordhan says former President Jacob Zuma was insistent the country needed to enter into a nuclear deal. That was just one facet. He spoke about SAA. What went on with Nhlanhla-Nene? In fact, it took me about 3 hours to go through, I think, about 68 pages of it. But it was gripping reading. It really was. On the line is political analyst Professor Somododa Fikeni. Good evening, Professor. Great to have you on The Money Show.
Thank you for inviting me, and good evening to you and your listeners.
Professor, why do you think this submission was leaked now?
Well, I do think that there might be many people who are interested in many aspects of the story, besides the fact that in South Africa generally, such sensitive documents do get leaked. Some may be trying to expose the fact that Pravin Gordhan also met with the Guptas, which I think it's not that much of a big deal, because I suspect the proximity of the Guptas to the presidency and some of their programs would have made them to meet virtually with most of the ministers. But the key question is, what did they do once they knew that there were some irregularities intended? And the other reason for leaking the document would simply be to preempt and to prepare the public for whatever presentation that he's going to make.
Yeah, just hearing you say that, though, and you're quite right. The question is, after people knew what the Guptas were about, it sort of shines in on that. But why then is the EFF so against Pravin Gordhan?
Well, it's not clear at this stage as to why they would have turned around and be so against him. Perhaps it might be that some of the individuals in the ministries or departments where he is operating may not be very happy and therefore would be leaking information or giving information to the EFF to say either we're discriminated against or there is a pattern or a certain agenda. But I do think that also, remember, people that EFF once defended, or some of its leaders, it doesn't take long before they turn against them and try to expose them.
Yeah, that's on the one hand. On the other hand, we've also got the public protector, Busisiwe Mkhwebane, also taking aim at Pravin Gordhan.
Certainly, this came quite as a surprise, especially the timing of it. Though we knew that she was interested in investigating Pravin Gordhan, but the context then had changed. And that she would go for this particular case with all the sensitivities, given all efforts which were there before to try and bring Pravin Gordhan down. But that not to say that we should not be looking into any other political figure, because the mistake we often make is that when Pravin Gordhan was facing Jacob Zuma, we start thinking that it's good versus evil, and it's angels versus evil, whereas there is a lot of gray in between. Most individuals are fallible, and political leaders are fallible. So to me, if there is anything in terms of the issue at hand, the one of agreement to release the worker early and give them the payments, if there is any substance, then it should be investigated irrespective of who is there.
Yeah, so in other words, you think she may be just tying up some loose ends at the end of what's happened just to get an answer, an honest answer, I suppose.
Certainly. Remember that Busisiwe Mkhwebane is also under extreme pressure. She was under extreme pressure to investigate people who were seen to be closer to Jacob Zuma, just like Malusi Gigaba. And this was already preordained because courts had already ruled on the matter of Gigaba. At the same time, you do have those people who always were putting pressure to say, those people who were against Jacob Zuma should also be exposed, not to have been that much, holy as they were presented. So you do have all those pressures coming into her office, and she's also struggling to gain traction, especially after a start that was not very easy in her office.
Yeah. Looking at that submission, going through that submission, it just reminded so many fellow journalists and myself about news stories that we have reported on. It just seems to tie up all the different dots. What's your take on it?
Which one of the stories? The one of Pravin Gordhan.
His submission, correct. His submission that's...
His submission, yes. I do think that he probably would be the most significant of the ministers, because most of the stories were around him as the Minister of Finance. Most of the stories would have been around him as the Minister of, public enterprise and so forth, and local government. So to that extent, this is now what I would say the apex of some of the submissions to the Zondo Commission, where people are providing concrete evidence that indeed Guptas were involved in state capture and that indeed the former president facilitated that particular process. And the pattern has been the same. Most interesting will be how will those who are denying this reality present themselves, because one presenter after the other have suggested a very clear link between the Guptas and the issue of state capture.
Yeah. The Hawks, and you don't represent the Hawks, you don't speak for the Hawks, but Soma Dodda, why do you think it's taken such a long time for prosecutions to happen? Is it political will up to now? What, in your opinion, is the reason behind this?
the sadness around scorpions or the hawks now has always been just like the, director of public prosecution. The politics around have been weighing heavily on the work they do. Hence, you find so many cases will leak and investigative journalists will present evidence, some of the whistleblowers, but the hawks seem to be very sluggish and sometimes reluctant. So it could be a reflection of the lack of political will.
Yeah. Just hearing you say that, I mean, us as the media, are we being used by various people or maybe organizations or politicians to maybe even scores?
There is no doubt that South African media, as much as it is vibrant and it has done a credible job, it is also being used in the process. And as such, in some instances, there is not even much of investigation more than political opponents, business opponents presenting the envelopes with information as to so-and-so is going through. And some of the media folks fall for it and they run with the story. And indeed, the story will prove to be true. But without asking questions, why this information, why now, and how is the other party involved in this, what is their interest, then we lose the plot, because in the end, we find media itself equally guilty.
Yeah. Just a final question. Mulusi Gigaba, Dudu Mieni, do they need to be worried?
I think they need to be worried because fingers keep pointing in their direction. But at the same time, they have not had the opportunity to present or to rebut, which I think increasingly it may prove to be very difficult for them to rebut everything, especially if some of the evidence is going to be tested forensically, things such as, did you have this meeting or not? And then people go and look at the telephone, the cell phone records or GPS coordinates as to whether you were in that particular spot. So in this case, they are the ones, once all this evidence has been presented, who ought to be very much worried.
Yeah, it's all about the Gupta Shabeen. Political analyst, Professor Somadodo Fikeni. Great to have you on The Money Show. Thank you.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Our market commentator tonight, Graham Kerner from the Kerner Perspective. Good evening, Graham.
Evening, Ray.
So the market's down this afternoon. I suppose the run had to come to an end. It was a good day yesterday. It was a great week last week.
Yeah, so I think it's incredible how volatile the market has actually become. A few days ago, you could buy Discovery under $150. You could buy Absa in the 140s. And then suddenly, Discovery is back at 170. So I think the sell-off in the run-up was overdone. But also, you sort of felt that there were a few people sort of saying, okay, well, I've got to get in and I've got to get in now. But it seems to be settling down. I think, it's been a hell of a year, let's be honest. And I think there are a lot of people who are saying, you know what, I've only got another, I'm counting the sleeps until my holiday. and are saying, I probably don't want to take big bets. But I would argue quite the opposite. I think you want to use this volatility to buy shares that are offering value and not be sort of sucked into either the malaise camp or the anxiety camp.
But it's difficult. If you think about it, 10 days ago, we were looking at just over 51,000 for the all share.
Yeah.
Now we are above 54,000. You're right in what you say, get in the game, but you may have missed it a bit.
You probably have missed the easy money, but I would also argue it quite possibly is not over.
Yeah.
A lot of the big picture stuff that made the world anxious 2-3 weeks ago, those monsters are still in the cupboard. So I think you could have another 2 or 3 days where suddenly you're in business again. I think the trick now is you figure out what you're prepared to pay for anything.
Yeah.
Whether it's Sasol or Standard Bank or Anglo American or York or any company, You say, that's what I would be prepared to pay. And if you've only got cash, you say, I'm going to start and I'm just going to put 20% of what I want on the bid at that level.
Mm.
And be cheeky and wait, you know, because we got great opportunities literally a week ago and we may very well get them. But, you know, it's not like somebody picks up the phone and says, oh, by the way, Ray, ABSA Group is trading at 144 or 156, whatever the case, whatever your level will be. Pick those levels and just try and stick with the discipline.
Yeah, you see. All right, then. So if you've got a Satrix 40, say, for instance, and people are very tempted to say, oh, this is not looking good whatsoever. Let's take my money out. Is it a good investment to keep it there? Because, yeah, I hear the long term, I get the argument. But then if you take that same amount of money, the 10 or 20,000 that you may have put, then you go and put that into a 7% fixed account, you may earn more there.
Well, if you just look over the last year, you know, the top 40, in spite of this little rally, is still down over 10%. So if you had your money in at 7, let's ignore dividends just for a second, but,
sure.
But you know, you would have had a 17% swing by having been in cash. And then, you know, all the bears will say, well, that's exactly what you should do always. That's not true. It's not what you should do always. Mm-hmm. But the issue around Satrix and trackers, that I think is now being exposed because of the massive correction in NASPAS and more recently in Richemont. So I always say, look at what you're actually investing in, but don't now take affirmation and say, oh, well, I could have earned 7. And even if you take a 3-year view, the top 40 is only up 1.6%. If you were sitting in cash, you'd say, well, that was a great place to be. Mm. Cash has been the great place to be in the run-up to this correction. But I don't think you want to be in cash over the next 3 years. You've got to force yourself almost counterintuitively to start investing and use this chaos.
Yeah. Speaking of NASPAS, just looking at the Reuters computer, down 2.86% today, but that had a great run last week anyway, so I suppose it's...
Yeah, but it's become so volatile. You know, yeah. If Tencent is up 6%, then, you know, NASPAS beats the drum. It's such a big component of the top 40 index.
Yeah.
You know, if it's up 6 or 8%, last week it was up over 8% one day, it just sort of sets the mood for the entire market. It's become volatile, and I think a lot of people are trying to get a handle on what is the real value for it. Our view, and we haven't been big fans in kind of this run-up, but our view at 2,700, 2,800 Rand, it's actually looking like good value. And this 10-cent thing, I think these challenges are actually temporary, but what's the right ratio? I don't think it's 23%. I think you probably want to have 6 or 8 or something like that.
Fair enough. Other moves and shakers, I see the Fashini Group did pretty well.
Yeah, you know, in a really awful trading environment, I think HEPS were up 8.5% or the percent or thereabouts. And you've seen this, Ray. It's companies like Clicks Group, for example, have just done a phenomenal job, and others are just sort of, you know, like MassMod are floundering along. So the companies who've got the right business model, who sort of stick to their knitting, are executing well. And let's also say, you know, there's some that have done some international acquisitions that have worked,
yeah.
And a lot of others are licking their wounds, and like Netcare and Famous Brands, who sort of, you know, trying to get the hell out of the UK.
Mm. But world markets as such are not looking good. I was watching Trump last night with his panda eyes, and he was saying the US economy is the best it's ever been, but I just couldn't quite believe him.
Look, I think the US economy is in a purple patch. But, you know, Trump claims glory for everything that's right, and nothing that goes wrong is ever his fault. But if you look at the U.S. unemployment rate, and of course, you know, the jobs numbers last week really were inspiring. Yeah. But, you know, when you get down to sort of 3%, the reality is most of that heavy lifting from where was unemployment over 9 down to 4 was in the Obama administration era. But he loves claiming glory for that. But having said that, the U.S. economy, courtesy mainly of those U.S. tax cuts, has really been very, very strong. But I think a more balanced House and a few other headwinds facing Trump is going to make it a lot more difficult. And if you look at what the flat yield curve is telling you in the U.S., between the 2-year, the 10-year, and virtually onto the 30-year, that flat yield curve is telling you that the market is anticipating a slowdown, let's say 2019 late or 2020, and that will come at a really difficult time for his presidential election campaign. So we'll see. But right now, the U.S. economy is flying. Companies in the S&P 500 aggregate earnings in 2018, let's say,
Yeah,
up 22%. Yeah. Man, you know, you've got a country like South Africa where we're limping along and delivering, you know, 6% and 8% when those numbers are positive. So they are in a purple patch.
Yeah.
But that's when you're looking at, in the rearview mirror, when you look through the windscreen, things are maybe not looking quite as cheerful.
Not so good. Graham Koerner from the Koerner Perspective. Great to have you on The Money Show. Thanks, Graham. Right, the fast fact tonight, courtesy of Cape Talk 702 and Mercantile Bank, the business bank inspired by entrepreneurs. 1,000 Rand up for grabs. I said I'd take the 10th SMS. The question tonight, if I said to you 500 billion rand and counting so far, what am I talking about? Looking at the SMS line, I've had the SABC, I've had SAA, another SABC. Nope, you're wrong. Let's see if we have a right answer tonight. Zayim in Rondebosch, hi, good evening.
Good evening, how are you?
Not too bad, Zayim. Come, let me give you 1,000 rand courtesy of Mercantile Bank. What's the answer?
The answer is the state capture.
Absolutely, Zayim. Well done, 1,000 Rand on its way to you. You're quite right. The submission by Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan last night leaked to the media. The estimated cost now so far, 500 billion Rand. That's what the Zuma era of state capture cost this country. That's what the estimate is. So well done, Zayim. 1,000 Rand on its way to you. And congratulations. You got 1,000 Rand in cash courtesy of 702 Cape Talk and Mercantile Bank, the business bank inspired by entrepreneurs. For another chance to win, head over to the 702 and Cape Talk website and enter the online Fast Fact competition. 1,000 Rand is up for grabs each week, courtesy of 702, Cape Talk and Mercantile Bank.
The Money Show is brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. Nedbank.
Coming up to 13 minutes to 7 o'clock, and the African Investment Forum appears to be a strong follow-up to the Investment Summit. Our president said, and I quote, "The forum is a platform to move infrastructure projects to bankable stages for SA." What exactly did he mean by that? Well, the Investment Summit at the end of October saw an influx of 290 billion rand in investments into our local economy and 400 billion in investment pledges. That's the big thing, pledges. Will there be honoured? In April, Ramaphosa set an ambitious goal of raising $100 billion in investment over the next 5 years. So he's got a bit of time to go still. That's a huge amount of investment. On the line is the Managing Director of Emerging Markets in Africa at Deloitte, Dr. Martin Davies. Doctor, good evening. Welcome to The Money Show.
Thank you very much. Always good to be here.
So much of a focus on the investment summits, but now we've got the African Investment Forum. Why is this important? Is this just a mere follow-up?
Actually, it was not part of the SA Investment Forum, which President Ramaphosa hosted a couple of weeks ago. This was planned long in advance, actually. Just the timing is kind of opportune. So it's the African Development Bank, which is relatively low-key in this part of the world, much more prominent in West Africa, of course, housed, headquartered in Abidjan, the capital of Côte d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast. And they convened this three-and-a-half-day investment forum in Sandton this past week. It's initially, I was told, 150 people were the target audience. This time, first inaugural event, 1,500. So if anything, it's been incredibly good business for hotels and restaurants in Sandton.
Yeah.
And being there the last couple of days, the first time I've seen really an incredible Pan-African participants, audience, attendees, and that's only a good thing.
It sounds good, and I must admit, we do battle at Prime Media to get out of our own buildings sometimes because of it, but is it just a talk shop, or is there more to this?
Yeah, you know, what you have these sort of, you know, investment commercial conferences in a sort of pseudo-intellectual wrapper, and these are these sessions which take place and talk about all good and great things and potential about the continent. And those are nice, but it's not so much that's kind of interesting, but you've heard one of these sessions, you've heard them all most of the time. There's maybe a bit of tidbits here and there with some new content, but more importantly, you're meeting interesting people, whether it's just, you know, by sheer luck bumping into them in the corridors or by design and arranging one-on-one meetings, which is far more productive. So it's sort of almost like a World Economic Forum in terms of you have this sort of, you know, high-powered supercharged networking with an intellectual wrapper sort of around it to get people to think they're part of something greater and something mission orientated, and then mission ultimately is developing our continent, and that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, you're quite right, developing our continent, but it's also about developing us, because charity begins at home. Looking at what Africa can do for South Africa, it's really easy to look at the United States and Europe and I suppose China and say, right, invest in us. Is Africa investing in us?
You know, the sort of the quip I heard recently, and, you know, many countries, whether it's China, whether it's the US, watch this space, you know, the European Union, even Turkey and India, these countries have Africa strategies. Everyone has an Africa strategy except Africa. So that's sort of maybe a bit cruel, but I think from our side, it's, you know, South African business was really trailblazing up north in the last 20 years or so, arguably in the last 4 to 5 years. We have become somewhat jaded, I think, and some big corporates have lost a lot of money in the continent as the economies have turned, particularly in the sort of mid-post-2014 in the oil-propelled economies as the oil price bottom fell out. I think Nigeria, many companies, the tide went out, and you could see who was swimming about the trunks. So, but I think it's coming back a bit. It's nowhere near as sort of the roaring Africa it was. Think back, you know, 2012, 13, up to early 2014. But a good thing is that, you know, it's good that they're coming to Johannesburg. We are the engine room of this region, most certainly. And it's important, I think, for South Africa business to start to relook Africa, and Africa will start not as a continent or some sort of unified region, but certain key countries are progressing very rapidly. And I think these countries offer new opportunities for South African capital. And this meeting the last few days maybe gives us some new networks and some new thinking, more importantly, to sort of think about how SA corporates, ideally even a government, start to think about SA incorporated.
Yeah.
An approach really hasn't happened, but we need to be somewhat more coordinated as we promote hopefully a re-energized sort of Africa 2.0 foreign commercial policy to the north.
Hearing you say that and looking at what's happening with MTN in Nigeria, are we really all working together? Because is it just a Nigeria problem, or is it a broader problem? Because it looks like Nigeria is, I don't know, not wanting to play along with the rest of us.
Well, you know, I think Nigeria's issues and challenges many foreign investors face in Nigeria are unique to Nigeria. I think, you know, other countries is quite different. I think, however, the underlying story here is that perhaps our foreign policy has not been as well received in the region as many South Africans thought it has been in the last 10 years or so. I think there have been some sort of errors made there. And if you're looking at how the tit-for-tat and how South African sort of immigration at times is treated very often, African immigrants, African business people traveling to South Africa. Well, are we surprised when some of our businesses suffer the consequences of this?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's highly unfortunate. There was a conference recently, I was told, and anecdotally, the CEO of Rwanda Air, one of the most leading companies across the continent in the aviation space, was refused a visa to come down to Cape Town for a conference. And we can't behave like that. So, you know, our companies, I'm afraid, at times are collateral damage to this. But there's a unique Nigeria story, but the rest of the continent, I think, is, with very minor exception, a very welcoming of South African capital and what we have to bring.
Yeah. Managing Director of Emerging Markets in Africa at Deloitte, Dr. Martin Davies, great to have you on The Money Show. Thank you.
Money Show FAQs.
Frequently asked questions, that's when you give us the questions and we get an expert on to find the answer for you. Tonight, China, Russia and Turkey have been dumping US debts. What does this mean for the United States and our country as well? On the line is Chief Economist at the Efficient Group, Davy Roets. Hi, Davy, good evening.
And good evening to you, Ray.
Right, okay, so let's have a look at this now. I mean, there's this whole Cold War going on, so to speak, cold economic war between Turkey, China, and the United States. We've had Trump yesterday saying, you know what, we've never had it so good. Is the floor about to fall away from beneath him?
No, I don't think so. American economy is absolutely cooking. The U.S. economy is growing very fast. Unemployment levels are very, very low. Certainly what is happening is that the Federal Reserve, the central bank, is getting concerned about inflation. They're getting concerned about an economy that's getting red hot. And they've recently started increasing interest rates, and they will continue to do so. And, of course, the financial markets, like the equity markets, they're getting quite nervous about the prospects of high interest rates. And what we have seen recently is that equity prices came down because of an anticipation of further interest rate increases in the United States. So, no, I think Trump is absolutely correct in that the U.S. economy is doing very well. The U.S. financial markets may not be doing that well, and, of course, that is, has got a knock-on effect to the rest of the world, including South Africa as well. But the U.S. economy itself, that is an amazing economy at the moment.
See, that's a problem because Trump is pretty clever, I suppose. He is the president of his country. He's making sure that his country does succeed. But if you look at what's happening with South Africa, we are not caught up in this, and we're battling a little bit.
Yes, we are battling because two things are happening in the U.S. Remember, the U.S. dollar, the American dollar, is the world's currency. Whether we like Trump or not, the U.S. dollar is the world's currency. And there's a very important comment to be made about some other countries wanting to dump American debt and so on. But certainly what is happening at the moment is that there's a so-called trade war with Trump looking for trouble with the Chinese and just about everybody else. And everybody feels safe in the United States. And that's part of the reason why money is flowing out of countries like South Africa to where it feels safe, and that is in the United States. Another reason why we've seen a relatively strong U.S. dollar has to do with interest rates going up in the United States. If the interest rates go up, then, of course, it becomes more attractive to put money in the U.S. economy. And that's another reason why countries like, for example, the Rand currencies have been getting under some pressure. But there's a very important point that needs to be made here. Mm. And I think that is what you're alluding to. And that is many countries, I mean, the Middle Eastern countries, the Russians, the Chinese, the Europeans, all of them, have been saying, let's get rid of the U.S. dollar. Let's start using our own currency. Even in the case of South Africa, we recently started buying renminbi, the Chinese currency, and added that to our official reserves. But the bulk of South Africa's official reserves is in U.S. dollars. And the reason for that is because not only because the U.S. currency itself, but it's also because of the U.S. capital market. Now, this is important to understand. If a Chinese exports to the United States, and they export more than what they import, they run a so-called current account surplus. Yeah. So they accumulate all these dollars. What do you do with these dollars? You don't put it under your bed. You put it somewhere. And the most liquid market in the world is the U.S. capital market, the so-called T-bills or treasury bills. Yeah. And the Chinese invested in there. So you don't have a choice, really. If you want to do business with the Americans, inevitably, you are going to invest in America because that is the only market that is deep enough and liquid enough to accommodate massive international reserves.
You certainly have given us something to think about this evening. Chief Economist at the Efficient Group, Davi Roux, it's great to have you on The Money Show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Davi Roux, yes, should we have our own currency that rules the world? Think about it, the Cold War, how did that come to an end? How did they beat the USSR? Well, the answer to that is the dollar. The dollar was just too strong for the ruble.
702
on 92.7
and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za, the 702 app, and on DSTV channel 856.
Just gone 8 minutes past 7 o'clock. Hooray for Bruce on The Money Show. Money Show brought to you by Nedbank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently, Nedbank. Well, coming up tonight in the next half hour, Warren Ingram talking to us from Galileo Capital, talking about how to invest your money. You need to be sensible about how you're going to invest your money, where you're going to put it, a more rational manner of investing your money. So that discussion coming up shortly, and I'd like to hear from you. Do give me a call, 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. If you'd like to add to the conversation, because maybe you have some questions, because tonight, talking about the JSC as well and investing on the JSC. And you see these movies like Wall Street, Gordon Gekko, and Charlie Sheen, he was in the first one. And these guys go out and they invest and they make millions of rands and, you know, they drive around in fancy sports cars and you want to be like them sometimes. But, I mean, how do they get it right? And I look, I think maybe Gordon Gekko is a very bad example because I think he was put into prison for all sorts of fixings and all sorts of things like that. But there is a way to make money. And on The Money Show, every single night we speak to market commentators and many of these guys, they work for sort of corporations or for companies who trade and they make money, they make a living. That's what the JSE is. So how does it work for you and for me? And maybe you have a question about this. So give me a call, 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. Well, personal finance expert and director with Galileo Capital, Warren Ingram joins us. Warren, good evening.
Hello, Ray.
So, all right, let's be sensible about where we're going to put our money. Tell us more.
No Gordon Geckos, please.
No, 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 you don't want that. You see, there's an honest way of doing this, isn't there?
There's an honest and much more sane and predictable way of making money than trying to make it in days or weeks or months, you know, which is almost a surefire way to lose it all.
All right, so how do you make it? I mean, you have these guys on their laptops and they go, sell, and they've just made $5 million. Is it really as easy as that?
No, definitely not. You know, and I think that, you know, it's amazing what kind of what movies and I guess TV have done to the image of moneymakers, you know, and thinking that it's that easy. So I think on the one side, you always need to understand the eighth wonder of the world, which is compound growth. And just to try and explain that really simply, you know, that's when your money starts to generate growth on its own. So in other words, let's just say you've got 100,000 rand that you've managed to accumulate, and you put it away and you invest it, and it grows at 10% a year. With you doing nothing, your 100,000 rand has suddenly become 110,000 rand, and you know, in the year after that, it's probably 121,000 rand. And it doesn't take long before your 100,000 is 200,000, and that's without you adding money to it. You know, it just starts to grow on itself, and the longer you leave it, the bigger that growth gets. And you know, and that's really the most important thing to understand about investing is, it always takes an incredibly long time, or you know, and it sometimes seems impossibly long time for you to make your first amount of money, your first big lump sum. And that really is going to come from you saving and building up a little bit over time, every day, every month, every year. But what happens is once you've got that lump sum, you know, that's when investing starts to become a little bit more easy, a little bit more predictable, because then you get this power of compounding working in your favor. And that's really the whole trick to any kind of investing, whether it's in shares or, you know, residential property or other kinds of property or even in a business. You know, it's about sometimes just being patient and letting that capital accumulate on itself.
Yeah, because it's quite difficult sometimes, isn't it? You have that little bit of capital, or maybe your savings, and you go and you put that into a share, you buy something, I said earlier on, Satrix, and then you don't see it really grow, you lose patience, and you want to take it out.
And I think that's probably the real danger that I see at the moment with people that have been investing, let's just say first-time investors that have been, you know, been in the market for the last 3 to 5 years. Because if they've bought something, you know, like a Satrix, and there's really, you know, Satrix is nothing wrong with it, you know, especially the kind of a more generic one, you know, the top 40 index, and it's not just Satrix that makes those products. There are quite a few product providers that offer exchange-traded funds on the index. And the danger is that you've seen almost no growth for that period of time, you know, the last, let's say, 4 or 5 years. And I think that's really the danger now, because, you know, people start to look at adverts from, you know, from the bank saying, you know, you can get 8% interest a year, and then, you know, they're looking at their statement and saying, you know, I got nothing like 8% a year from my shares, and you know, those guys on the radio have been telling me that shares were a good place to get money, so why am I doing it? And I think that's the danger, you know, and always in a situation like that, I always want to try and make people kind of zoom out a bit and just look a little bit longer term. And just as an example, you know, if you'd been in the JSE for the last 8 years, and let's just say you've been lucky or clever or disciplined enough to put 100,000 rand in the JSE 8 years ago, and truthfully, you know, did nothing more clever than just buy the top 40 index.
Yeah.
The likelihood is that your money's gone from 100 to 191,000 rand over that 8-year period. And if we think about the last 8 years, it's hardly been a great time in, you know, the South African economy. You know, we've had Zumanomics going full bore, you know, doing its best to kind of erode the value of our country's you know, economic growth. We've had consumers really struggling, you know, retailers really battling, lots of them either going bankrupt or pulling out of the country. But your money's nearly doubled over that 8-year period. And that's the trick with investing, is you've got to be able to kind of zoom out and look at the longer term. And I think also we can't be scared by volatility or bad news. You know, and volatility, you often hear that, you know, market commentators saying market was really volatile. You know, that, you know, a lot of times people don't understand what that is. But that's really just, you know, when you're looking at your statement and it's gone from, you know, 190 down to 180,000 rand and then 170, and suddenly people saying, you know, I can't handle these losses anymore. I want out.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is we almost do it as that kind of one big herd. You know, when you look at the stock market, to me, it's just one enormous herd of people often acting irrationally over short periods of time. And you know, last week was a classic example. You know, if I'd said to you on Monday morning at 8 o'clock last week, you know, Ray, we're going to have the best week in the last decade on the JSE, you would have honestly thought I was smoking my socks. I mean, you know,
you're quite right.
On Monday morning last week, that would have told us that, you know, that this would be a fabulous week in the markets. And the truth is, it was literally that. It was the best week in the last decade. And you know, that was a return that investors needed to be in to get that 191,000 rand. And that's the whole point about this, is, you know, trying to look ahead and say, oh, I know what's going to happen, or, you know, I mean, I'm listening to those guys on the radio and they know what's going to happen. Mm. But the truth is, no one knows what's going to happen in the next week. You know, we can sound really clever about what we think is going to happen and what interest rates are going to do and what Trump's going to do and what the elections are going to do, but the reality is we don't know. And so to make a long-term investment decision based on what you or I think is going to happen next week or next month, or, you know, I mean, the new favorite is, you know, what's going to happen in the elections in South Africa, and, you know, is that going to be in April or May? And that's such an incredibly short time frame to make an investment decision that I think it's kind of a waste of time, actually, to worry about that. You really have to take a longer-term view.
SMS here just says, Ray, what about short-term investments? And I must admit, you know, every single day I look at the shares going up and going down, and can you not maybe read the markets? Let's take Clicks, for instance. I remember about 2 weeks ago, Clicks just shot up 5%. And I thought, wow, I could have made some cash out of that.
Yeah, so you know, that's the nice thing about investing, is it's always easy in hindsight, and that's the problem. Is, you know, let's use that Clicks example. You know, I mean, to try and anticipate what's going to happen there, first thing is you need to anticipate that there's going to be some kind of positive news that you know, that's going to come to the market about Clicks, as an example. Then you need to anticipate how the market's going to react to that, and to what extent it's going to react to that. And then you need to be in the share at least a day before that positive news is released, so that you can profit from that decision. And I think, you know, nowadays that's an incredibly, I think, well, not incredibly difficult. I actually think that's an impossible thing to do. You know, very often, you know, unless there's kind of some kind of, you know, illegal inside information, you know, we don't even know what direction things are going to go. And so, you know, to me, you know, worrying about short-term gains is really a good way to lose money. And I think, you know, we've been given an absolutely brilliant example in the last, you know, decade from a so-called investment called Bitcoin.
Yes.
You know, no one's talking about Bitcoin anymore. And the reason no one's talking about it is because it went down, and now it's gone nowhere for a few months. And I think the point there is, that, you know, that's something that people got really excited about, how, and kind of started to brag on Facebook about how, you know, they'd become millionaires on their Bitcoin overnight. I think, you know, guys were even writing books about how they were making money out of Bitcoin. And truthfully, they can claim no skill, no credit about being able to forecast how that was going to work. You know, that was something that, you know, that might have a long-term technological benefit for society and for the financial services industry and many others. But to be able to say, yes, I knew exactly what Bitcoin was going to do, and I could put it on a graph and figure it all out, you know, that's just garbage. And the reason I know that is, you know, look at what happened to Bitcoin. You know, in the last few months of last year, it almost went up in a straight line and you know, peaked at an incredible price. And I think it was about $20,000 a coin.
Yep.
And then, you know, nowadays it's kind of at $6,300, $6,400, and it's been there pretty much since January. And you know, people who were buying in at $18,000 or $19,000, thinking this was a short-term way to make a fortune, well, you know, they found a very short-term way to see their money go down by, you know, two-thirds. And short-term thinking is really dangerous for a rational investor.
I've just gone to the Bitcoin desk as you were speaking. 6,450 on the Coinbase, that's what they say. So you're quite right, that's a way off 20,000. But that's also a fad as well. I mean, very often it's like a pyramid scheme. It's great for the first guy that gets in, not so much for the last guy.
Yes, and I think that's the point. You know, if we're talking about investments, then that's not investing. You know, that's really, in the purest form, speculation, where you're buying something with the hope that that you'll be able to sell it to someone who's more gullible. You know, if you want to be unkind, or has greater faith in whatever it is that you've bought than you do. And you know, what's really dangerous is when that sort of cycle starts to go into a bubble phase, which is exactly what happened there. People are borrowing money out of their mortgages. You know, they're using personal loans or credit cards, and they're buying the stuff, saying to themselves, you know what, if it costs me 10% interest for a couple of months, that's okay, because I'm going to make 100%.
Yeah.
And just think about that now. You know, those are people borrowing money. Let's just say they borrowed $18,000. You know, put it in a Bitcoin, and that Bitcoin is now worth 6,300, and they're paying massive interest on short term debt, and got something that if they sell now, you know, what they're going to get such a small amount of value out of that, but they've got the debt.
Oh, we need to talk about this more. Personal finance expert and director with Galileo Capital, Warren Ingram. Great to have you back on the Money Show. Thank you.
Pleasure.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Money Show.
Coming up shortly, speaking to Pavlo Fotidis, how to turn 2018's exhaustion into a powerful 2019 business building year through 8 mindset changes. I'm looking forward to that discussion just after 7:30. Now, you'll know him from soccer. He has taken command of Bafana Bafana many, many times. South African soccer legend Jomo Sono joins us tonight on The Money Show. He is the president of Infinity SA, who are behind a new free-to-air internet streaming platform in South Africa called TV2Go. Jomo, great to have you on The Money Show. Hi, good evening.
Good evening. How are you and 702 listeners?
Oh, great to have you on. Thank you. Now, this sounds exciting. Tell us more about your new initiative at TV2Go. Sounds fascinating.
Yeah, TV2Go came about when I went to Israel on a business trip. And I was introduced to these guys who are busy with who own TV2Go, and they showed me what they were doing in the other world. And I said to them, you know, in South Africa, there's a problem of data. People are trying to take data down, and people are paying for data. They pay for the movie, and then they pay for the license of the TV. You know, just entertainment on those lines is becoming too expensive. Can we do something whereby people in South Africa can only pay data and not pay for the movies? And they said, no, this is what we're doing. I said, I would be interested. Can we get involved? I become your partner?
Yeah.
And they agreed. It's something which has been going on for 2 years.
So how does it work then? Is it the same sort of thing as, say, Showmax or Netflix, where you just stream it in? Do you have to subscribe?
You don't have to subscribe here. All you do is just buy data, get a link, and watch whatever you want to watch.
Yo, that's good. So, okay, I have to ask the million-dollar question. What's in it for you then? Is it purely advertising?
We get our revenue from advertising only.
Right. Okay, that sounds great. Now, what about soccer? Because we all want to watch soccer on a weekend, and sometimes our public broadcaster doesn't want to cooperate. I mean, this is a great idea to get it out there for everybody.
What has been on my mind and what has been bothering me all the years is that you look at the legends in cricket, in soccer, in boxing, in South Africa, once you stop, you're good as dead. You're finished.
Mm.
You know, they take everything away, the archives away. So with this channel, we can stream and start a new channel called the Legends Channel, whereby if you can check now, there is a Jomo Solar channel. There is a Jomo Cosmos channel. So we're trying to bring out the great old guys, because our grandchildren and our children have never seen us. They don't know about us. They just see this big guy walking. They think, I was born like this. I could never run.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You know, we have great boxers like Jerry Cotier.
Yeah.
You know, the kids don't know that Jerry Cotier was a world champion. Peter Tera Matebula, Matlala, Ace Ntweleng, Tine Izaza. You go to the rugby, you have people like Nas.
The legends, yeah.
The legends, we're trying to... Each and every legend must have his own channel. Like the family of, let's say, Harry Kutsie, they're late and they're sitting at home. They think about him on his birthday. They just click in and let's have a look at Harry Kutsie's channel. Yeah. And they look at it and brings back all the memories.
Oh, that's lovely. That really, really is lovely. Now, just hearing you say that, what else will be on your book? Hey, I mean, what else is involved? Is it series?
Movie. Education, which is very, very important. We'll have mathematics on our channel, children's movies, churches, gospel music, and old music, whereby, I mean, we had the Beatles, we had Harari, we had Sipho Hostix Mabuse. The children don't know him. Those are the pioneers of music. Miriam Makeba, Leta Mbuli. We would like to have their own channel where you can say, I want to see Leta Mbuli. And then you just click in and then you have a look at Leta Mbuli's career.
That's great. That Nobody really is great.
It's what they did.
Yeah.
It's what was shown on TV years ago, but now we're bringing back all those old memories.
Because we've lost that. I mean, I know in the eyewitness newsroom, very often somebody will pass away and I'll go, oh no, that person's passed away. And all the youngsters look at me and go, who? Never heard of that person. And you kind of cringe a little bit because we're losing our heritage. We're losing our history.
We do. Especially the South Africans. We're losing our heritage. In America, they keep them, eh?
Yeah. Yeah.
In America, they keep them. You still see the old Keisha Stray, Muhammad Ali. You see all those people there. But here at home, once you finished, you're all over. That's it. They throw in the bin. They pick it up.
Yeah.
So we try to make sure we're not being picked up by pick it up and thrown in the garbage.
<You know? laughs> So when? The big question is when does this start?
Today.
Oh, really? Right now?
Yeah.
Can I log on right now on my laptop?
Yeah, you can go ahead. Have a look.
TV to go. I'm definitely going to do that. I think it's fantastic. Do you have a website somewhere where people can get more information?
Yes, everything. What I could do, if you send me an email on my phone, I can send you the link immediately.
Perfect. I'll get our producers to sort that out. That's not a problem whatsoever. Soccer legend, Jomo Solo.
And it's also free, eh?
You see, that's the nice thing. You just need data, but that's fine. You can go to a coffee shop and just sit there and all the rest of it. Soccer legend Jomo Sono, I could chat to you the entire night. Thank you so much for coming onto The Money Show.
Thank you very much for inviting me to the show. Thank you.
all the best. That's Jomo Sono. That's such a great idea. It really is, because we're losing our history, losing our heritage. There's a business model right there.
The Money Show.
Small business.
And the Small Business Focus feature is brought to you by BE Connects, a division of the LFP Group. And quickly, before we move on, TV2Go. So it's tv2go.co.za. That's the website address for Jomo Sono, tv2go.co.za. Now, talking right now, you're getting to the end of the year. You're tired. You've been doing this for a long time. December's around the corner. You're thinking about Christmas and you just want to collapse in a little heap on the floor. Many business owners say they're exhausted. They just can't get through to 2019. This is a bit of a problem area because very often this is where you fail. Your business fails. You miss out on that revenue. So How do you get around this? Well, our guest tonight is Pavlo Fotidis from Auric Business Accelerator. Pav, good evening. This is a huge, huge problem. You need to get around this.
Yeah, you do. You've got to get your head right because, you know, everyone I'm seeing at the moment, not everyone, but most people by far are saying they're emotionally exhausted, and it's been a very, very emotional year. If you look at the news, but in fact, just look this week or last week in Parliament, you know, seeing that kind of fight and that scrap and that language and that behavior is very distressing. You know, these are the individuals that are meant to be setting the prime example of how to lead the country and shape the future for us. So those kinds of intervention exhaust people. Intellectually, it's been exhausting. Technically, figuring out how to deal with a no-growth economy, a really tough economy, a volatile environment. And then physically, it's physically exhausting. You know, your brain has eaten a huge amount of energy. Your body's tired. Everyone's tired. And the question is, Ray, I think back to 365 days ago or 364 days ago, it was no different.
Yeah.
And if I think back to, let's say, what, 720, 740 days ago, it equally wasn't that different. And this cycle repeats itself. And I don't think it's going to get any better or change in any other way unless you build your business differently. But most people are undercapacitated and under-resourced and simply did last year what they did the year before, which they did the year before, and the cycle repeats. But there is a way to break it.
Okay, so how do you break it? Because, say, for instance, you're a one-man or one-woman show, and you need to, you can't go 24-7. How, what's the remedy?
There is no remedy if you're a one-man show.
So you just have to, you can't.
No, it's very, very hard. If you're running a micro enterprise where you are the business, and say, for example, you're a physiotherapist.
Yeah.
If your hands aren't on a body, they're not making money. But that's not where the real problem lies, because your overheads are going to be very low, so the risk is relatively low too. It's when you're running a sizable business, let's say a 30, 40, 50 person business. Let's say you're doing 10, 30, 50 million, 60 million rand a year. That's where the big issue comes in. And mostly what people turn around and say is, Ray, it's been a tough year. It's been a long year. What you need to do is just take a holiday. And you know what? After 2 weeks, you'll be fine again. And that will be the beginning of 2019.
Okay, but you take a holiday. That's fine. But doesn't that break your momentum? That's the thing.
Completely. There's a big difference between a holiday break and a momentum break in a business. You absolutely need to take holidays. In fact, if you don't create space to do nothing, you can never think by definition, because thinking is a percolating exercise. It's not where you sit down and say, I'm going to solve a problem through thought, and you mechanically structure your brain and thinking and architect the thoughts to arrange them in such a way that you have a eureka moment, an aha moment. What happens with many businesses is right now, businesses are so busy delivering and sweating the last couple of months of the year where most people do most of their business in order to build a buffer and to try and build the so-called momentum for next year. But if your business isn't built right and all the energy is going into delivery this year, you're not building the base to create the momentum to take your business from where you are this year to the same level next year so that next year sees the next step up. Very often what happens at the beginning of the year, people have to restart the engine. And that normally takes, what, a month and a half, 2 months?
And January is very tough.
Yeah, January is very tough. People are low on cash. Everyone's done most of the buying. Everyone is trying to get going again. And then what happens with all that energy to restart the business?
Yeah.
Honestly, Ray, you're exhausted by the time it's Easter. And in truth, our commercial year truly only begins after the first week of May every year.
Do you have to factor that in, though, that you're going to have slow months? Do you have to accept the fact that January is going to be horrendous? I need to make enough money in, say, September, October, November, because thereafter it's desert times.
Yeah, but I think it's also a lousy attitude, and it's not strategic to do that. You know, if one adopts that point of view, then remarkably, the way you think leads to the way you behave, and the way you behave gives you the result you've got. So this idea of seasonality and seasonal businesses, or this idea that you need to build a business that's going to operate dependent on the performance in the economy, I think are inastute approaches if you intend to build something a lot more sustainable and something that's going to grow, because there are remedies to both of those things. Right now, where a lot of energy ought to be concentrated, you're not going to go out there and do deals and sell.
Right.
The kind of selling you should be doing, and it should be actively managed, is relationship building with a view to establish the early stage meetings next year, once your customers and clients have had breaks, in order to secure the early stage sales that you'll be able to deliver in the first quarter of next year. You cannot afford to break it. And what happens, Ray, and I've seen this time and time again, and in fact, we've exhausted this topic so many times, but it's never enough. A business is like a body in many ways. You know, there's six primary, let's call it organs, in a business. Mm. And as you have in a body, a brain and lungs and kidneys and livers and a spleen, they all need to work consistently, tirelessly, in an integrated way. If you stop the bus because now instead of selling, you're going to focus on delivery, it's like literally saying, I'm going to put one organ to sleep and let the others function without it. It doesn't make for a very sustainable perspective.
Yeah.
The organs of a body are marketing to generate the leads, sales to close the leads, ops to deliver on them, procurement to buy right, people to have support and teams doing what they need to do, and enough money to keep things flowing. You can't simply stall one or stall two to focus on the others, because if you do that, then you move into this pattern of stop, start, stop, start. And that's where holidays, if you lead up to them incorrectly and if you haven't built your business right, break the momentum of a business itself.
Just like in the military, actually, if you go into a war, you have to keep those supply lines coming, because if you break those supply lines, all of a sudden you're in the middle of nowhere and you've got no ammo left. Interesting stuff that it really is. So how do you lock and load then for 2019? I mean, like, you know, military lock and load. How do you do that?
Well, this is where you know, very typically sales teams are excellent at getting products sold, because in many ways, products or services, in other words, the closure of a sale is where the commission lies.
Right.
But if you go into the market now with a strong selling approach, Ray, you're not, people won't hear you because they themselves are exhausted. Budgets are very depleted, literally, unless you're in a seasonal business and that's the main impetus in your market.
Exactly, yeah.
But most of us aren't in that. Most of us aren't in seasonal businesses. If you go into the market with that approach, you really are not going to find, I think, tremendous responses. And rather, I would now be sitting with my sales teams and talking about how to sell differently. Because what you're looking to sell is relationship and the opportunity for a very early stage meeting next year when people are fresh and ready with a view to procure from you.
Looking at how to deal with your exhaustion in 2018 and going into 2019 locked and loaded. Our guest tonight, Pavlos Fatidis from Orica Business Accelerator.
The Money Show is brought to you by NetBank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. NetBank.
Our small business focus tonight is talking about being exhausted. How do you survive the exhaustion at the end of 2018 and blast into 2019 and pick up your business? Our guest tonight, Pavlos Fatidis from Auric Business Accelerator. Pavlos, do people blame themselves, though? Is it a time of reflection? You get to December, and I hate to say it, suicide rates are up, and it's a very difficult time because it's a downtime.
Yeah, you know, the blame is also used extensively because it's been a tough year, Ray. In many ways, you know, people during the holidays reflect back on the year and say, well, I could have done this and I could have done that. Could have, would have, should have, didn't, number one. And that's a repeatable pattern if you really observe yourself and look at yourself carefully. And then very often people turn around and say, well, you know, the Rand was all over the place. And, well, we entered into a recession. And I hear the language of blame. Mm. And whilst the Rand was all over the place, it was all over the place for many others too. And whilst we entered into recession, it too affected everybody else that operates in this economy. And yet, there are businesses that have grown spectacularly well this year. And this idea of using blame, I think, is a very unconscious psychological place where you are choosing and opting not to succeed.
Yeah.
Because wherever there's an issue, wherever there's a problem, there's equally an opportunity in the business if you adopt the right mindset. What blaming does is it removes you from a position of power to act to rather a position of comfort and stasis, where you're turning around and saying, well, it's affected all of us. What can we do? Ha ha, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Actually, no. But the blame mindset needs to go.
But we also need to look at ourselves. Too many people are so busy looking around. Like you said, concentrate on your business. Just like you said, just because the economy is doing really badly, well, that's got nothing to do with me, really, because I have another business.
Yeah, but you know, I've also heard and I've seen, so quite a few people are saying to me, I've got to get to the next level next year. What do you think I should go and study? What do you think I should go and learn? What course do you think I should take? And really, it doesn't lie in any of that. The one thing that I think can remove blame very definitively, if you're looking for a practical way to rid yourself of the addiction to blame as an excuse to not succeed in business, Ray, find something you believe in and find something you love and find something you care about. And it might be pumps. It might be building things. It might be laying flooring. It could be anything. But the remarkable thing is this. The smartest people I know are not the people who are best educated. They're not the people who've got the biggest brains in the country. Their IQs might be very average. But the smartest people I know are people who are absolutely obsessed with what they're doing. And the more time and attention they pay to it, the cleverer and the smarter they become in it.
Get smarter, cope better, work cleverer.
And that's what happens eventually. You know, it's like a pot plant in many ways. When you really pay attention to it, it flourishes. That level of attention, that level of care, if you can apply it in your business because you do something that you love and something you believe in, it really helps you rid yourself of that blame.
Yeah. How do you focus them? I mean, yeah, you get to this time of the year and I say I'm going on leave on Friday. A lot of people shut down on Wednesday because you just can't focus.
Yeah, you know, the focusing thing has become very difficult in the last 2-3 years. It's been remarkable. So many business people I speak to are turning around and saying, you know, so this is a problem in my business, and we engage on that and we sort that out. And then they say to me at the end, which I find so distressing, so Pavlo, what do you think of this? And it might be something like the Internet of Things.
Yeah.
And they might not be anywhere near it. And then I say, why do you ask? No, I know someone who's doing something in the space, and apparently it's going to be a zillion-dollar industry in the next 3 minutes. And you know, also there's a bit of Bitcoin attached to it, and there's a bit of this attached to it, and there's a bit of that attached to it. And I'm saying, well, what's it got to do with you in any event? Yeah. Focus in on your business. Ring-fence yourself. Clear out the noise. And don't get involved in anything that isn't within your domain of control and isn't within the domain of your business. Because if you do, it is so easily to get distracted. As it is, Ray, you know, many people turn around and say, yeah, you know, Pavlo, we're out of here. I say, really, where are you off to? No, we're going to immigrate because I don't believe in the future of the country. And these individuals typically are people who've been saying this to me for 2, 3, 4 years. And I'm saying, let this be the year. Let this be the year. Between now and the 31st of December, make a call and decide one way or the other. But Ray, the one thing you can't do is be ambivalent. It's a tough economy. It's an exhausting economy. It is rough out there. You cannot afford to have any distraction. Block out the noise, whether it be news that agitates you, whether it be economic news that agitates you, whether it be social engagements that agitate you. Ring fence your mind and zone in and focus in. And I'll give you a great example.
Yeah.
As a youngster, I bought a business. I thought I was really clever, and I bought this business for a rand. Okay. I was 22 years old. And Ray, I realized within the month, as the month then came, and the people I bought the business from had both immigrated. Two went to Australia, one went to England.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it really strange that literally in the month that I took over the business, it was at the same time that they left. At the end of the month, I realized that there was over 4 million rands worth of debt sitting in there.
I was about to say, you did your due diligence.
Shockingly. It was terrible. It was the biggest disaster.
Oh, no, you did not.
No, I didn't. But it was also a form of fraud because it wasn't properly disclosed and it was
well hidden. No, sure, but...
And it crept out the cracks. And at 22, you know, what do you know? Not enough. Let me tell you.
Now
not
you
enough. Now you do, yeah. So in any event, the first 6 months, what I did was look outside of the domain of this business to friendly competitors, better established players in the industry, to see where we could collaborate, to see where we could joint venture, to see what I could rely on to help others lift my business for me. I got nowhere after 6 months other than digging deeper into debt.
Okay, can
and
I
at
ask
the end
you,
of six
yeah,
months,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
I zoned in, focused in, and said, I'm now going to sail this boat my way. I don't know if it's right. I don't know if it's wrong. I will get some advice on its direction, but I'm not going to look outside of the business where I have no control. I'm rather going to focus in on the business where I have control. And 5 years later, Ray, that business was very successfully sold.
And you're not going to tell me what it was, are you?
What, the business or their value? No, the value I won't talk about.
All right, we'll just leave it there. Just a final question. All right, we're heading towards Christmas period and a lot of people go down, say, we're in Gauteng where we're doing the show from tonight. Cape Town's listening. Maybe our Cape Town listeners will come up to Gauteng. You know, we do swap in this country. Mm-hmm. Very often, though, people go to another place and they say, ooh, that's a nice business over there. They research it. They come back in the new year and I've got a great new idea because I saw this on holiday.
Yeah, yeah. You know, well, I spoke to someone on the beach or whatever the case might be.
Yeah, there's that.
Really, there's that very, very loose conversation. I think a better way to use your exhaustion, you know, when you're exhausted and when you're tired, you might well be short-tempered. The one thing you will be is very, very vulnerable. It's a good time to ask people yeah. close to you, people that you've worked with, people in your team. Say, tell me, this year, your observations on me, what am I good at and what aren't I good at? Because, Ray, the stuff you're not good at, don't continue focusing on that. Rather, set a strategy this year that for next year, I will get the help I need in order to bolster my weaknesses so I can focus on my strengths. It's the earliest stage of building a deep, deep intelligence into the business. Corporates do it all the time. They are surrounded by smart executives, and they've got the most expensive consultants in the world around them too. This idea that you need to ride that alone is completely crazy because, Ray, the one thing you can never get back is time. And if you start next year the way you started this year, which is the way you started the year before, well, then who do you have to blame?
I'm glad you got your $4 million back. That's all I'm saying. Pavlo Fotidis from Auric Business Accelerator. Great to have you on The Money Show.
The Money Show is brought to you by NetBank. Looking at money from every angle leads to better money decisions. See money differently. NetBank.
And that wraps up The Money Show for a Thursday evening. Bruce is back tomorrow. Don't forget about the brutal biz quiz. Lots of money up for grabs tomorrow. It's 8 o'clock.